It is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Her name is Patty B., and her go-to saying is, God's got it.
Wow. Can you see me? I'm 4'11" and some change, and that change is pennies. So sometimes I can't even see over the podium. It's just the way it is. My name's Patty. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. My sobriety date is October the 13th, 1977. I celebrated 38 years yesterday. Yeah, it was awesome. I had a great day. And I'm topping it off by being here with you tonight. Bill made sure I did. He has been so kind over the last 3 years. I spoke here about 3 years ago, and every year on my birthday, he texts and calls me and sings happy birthday to me. Now, I knew him from Adam 3 years ago. And it, my own family, you know, I don't know. They don't know anything about my, well, they know about my sobriety, but they don't celebrate it with me. And that is sad, except that I have all of you to celebrate with. And that's a lot more than I got family, I think. I was born in Fresno and raised in Clovis, so I small ranching community, kind of the way Visalia was and Lindsay and all the Reedleys and the smaller towns around. My father was a mechanic, my mother a stenographer, and that's an old word for secretary. I'm old. I just went to my 50th high school reunion about 3 weeks ago. Yeah, it was very interesting because I kept looking at this woman and I didn't know who she was. It was right at the end. I finally went up and said, "You're Barbara, aren't you?" She said, "Yeah." She and I used to lifeguard. One night after we finished our shift, we went to her house and she got drunk on her butt. Okay, I was too afraid to drink. I just didn't drink. I said something about, remember when we were at your house? She goes, "Oh, we were all drunk on our butts." And I went, "No, you were." And I laughed about it because it would take me another 3, almost 4 years to start drinking. I want to talk about I had an older half-brother. I had two younger brothers, okay? My older half-brother came to live with us, and when I was 2 and a half, he started sexually molesting me. And then my father also did that. And the reason that's important is it laid the fertile ground emotionally for what would come later when I picked up that first drink. Let me tell you something about when you've been abused. You are betrayed by those you think love you and are supposed to take care of you. You lose your sense of innocence, safety, and security. And I spent a lot of my life being extremely shy, not looking at people, not talking to people, except unless you were my size. It took me a long time to get the courage to look people in the face and speak to them. And I started out by talking to the old people in the neighborhood. And the reason I'm laughing, because I'm going to tell you what happened. I would walk down the street and here'd come this old man or this old woman. And I'd look at the ground till we were about 5 feet apart. And I'd go, "Hi." And I'd look down again. I scared the hell out of them. Yeah. I was all in fourth grade or something when I'm doing this stuff. My mother assured me I'd never go anywhere in this world unless I could look people in the eye. And I really tried, you know, and I couldn't talk in front of others. I'll tell you, it was a mess. Okay, I want to talk to you about my first drink, my first drinking experience, because it's unusual. I have not ever heard anyone else talk about this yet, because there's always the yet. Okay, I'm married to my first husband. He's graduated from Czech school in the Air Force, and we went to the NCO club. Now, I am completely, utterly inexperienced drinking. I have had, by this time, one tiny sip of beer. End of story. And it was nasty. That's all I remember. It was nasty. The reason it was nasty, my girlfriend's father put a cigarette out in it. Yeah, I didn't know that till hours later, but I knew it was nasty. Anyway, so we're sitting there, and of course the waitress comes and asks us what we want to drink. I don't have a clue. The man across the table from us had a drink, and I said, "What do you drink?" And he said, "A whiskey sour." And I thought, well, it doesn't sound sweet, but okay, I'm going for it. And I ordered one. Then I ordered 12 more. First time out. I don't know how I can have alcohol poisoning. Now, you know, when you put stuff in, fluids in, you kind of have to go to the bathroom, right? So I went down the hall and I sat down, and the room began to spin as you would expect. And I thought there was something in my brain that said, "You shouldn't give in to this because I think you barf or something." But it was so delicious. I mean, the spinning was gentle, and, you know, I was like really getting into it. And all of a sudden, now I swear to you, this is what happened. I did not get sick. I had a hands-free orgasm. Yeah. I spent 9.5 years trying to replicate that experience. Now, I had some pretty good orgasms, but they were not hand-free. Beginner's luck, what can I say? You know, like a strike when you're bowling. I don't know. So now I have found the nectar of the gods, right? And I'm thinking, ooh, this is some really good shit. Oh, no wonder my mother didn't want me to drink. And that was the beginning. Now, I never did get sick that night, but I had a hangover for 4 days. And I remember on Monday, this was a Friday night, I remember on Monday the church ladies came to visit. And very sweet women. I was in San Angelo, Texas, and these three of them came up to the door, and I mean, I look like something, you know, they had dragged me down the street a couple of times. And I said, "Oh, I'm so sick." And I reached up and unlatched the door. And the next thing I know, they're helping me up. I had passed out, had fainted. Well, come to find out a couple of days later, I was pregnant. So I had dumped all of this alcohol in on an unsuspecting fetus. I didn't know I was pregnant, but I certainly had dumped it. It would be years later when I learned about fetal alcohol syndrome and compared the symptoms of fetal alcohol syndrome to the symptoms my son demonstrated early in his schooling. That was very, very hard for me to swallow and accept, and I had a great deal of shame about it, even though I had no way of knowing, etc. Years later, probably, 17 years later, I would become the fetal alcohol syndrome coordinator for the state of Alaska. And it was my job to train people. Now, Alaska happens to be one of those states that has a very high incidence of fetal alcohol. So I spent 9.5 years walking on the wild side. I wanted to be hip, slick, and cool in the worst way. I never made it. I never made it. In fact, one of my classmates said to me recently, "You were so sweet." And I thought, that was not what I was aiming for. Sweet was not it. Okay. And I thought, isn't that funny? That's how he remembers me. Because I never, ever thought of myself that way. Now I do today. I know I'm a sweet person today. I know I'm a good person today. I know I'm a lady today. I live my life with integrity today. Those 9.5 years, I went 90 degrees to all my values. I broke the law in many ways. Although I never got a DUI, I should have. Fraud, burglary. Well, use your imagination. I was raised in the church. And I remember one Sunday my mom let me sit in the back of the church. Unusual. I had to sit up third pew from the front. And the minister was leaning over the podium. And I'm screwing around back there reading the hymnal, you know, not listening. But he said, "If you have thought it, you have done it." Yeah, well, the problem was I was sort of having a little sexual fantasy about him. I mean, it wasn't a bad one. It was just one of the, I mean, he's married, but I'm still having this little thing. And as though I didn't hear it the first time, he leaned even further. He's a big old man. His finger looked like one of those guns on a ship, you know. He scared the poo out of me. "You have thought it. You have done it." And I thought, I asked, "Did you hear what he said?" My girlfriend said, "No, I wasn't listening." And I'm thinking, how do you not think? I mean, I didn't understand that. I had no concept how to control my thinking at all. It would be, boy, another 20 years, 25 years before I understood that that could even happen. See, I have popcorn brain. That's what I call it. My little head, you know, is in there doing this. And it's not so bad now because I take medication. I need it and I take it. And I am grateful for that medication, let me tell you. But I've also learned to focus my mind. I've also learned how to get quiet in here with me. See, I never wanted to be in here with me. That was a very scary place. Like I said, the mind was constantly going, so, you know, I'm out there and I'm watching you. That's another thing that happens when you've been sexually abused, is you're hypervigilant. And I constantly... Now, that worked pretty good because I turned out to be a therapist. So I have to watch people, you know, what they're saying and what they're not saying. Because little clouds across their eyes, you know, when they're talking to you. So you know. You know, that was a lie. You know, but you don't say, "Hey, you're lying to me." You figure a way to facilitate. Okay, that's the big word. I have notes up here because I tend to go off popcorn brain. So if you're wondering, does she remember her story? Yeah, I do. I really do remember it. I had 8 years of sobriety before I had the sexual abuse memories. And I'm real grateful that they didn't come any sooner than that, because by then I had found a need for and discovered a higher power. And I walked in the doors angry. That isn't even raging. I was raging. And I put out the energy, "Stay away from me." And people did, except for two men. These darling men had been around a while. At one of them, I don't remember his name, but I'd been going for about a year, and he stood in front of the exit door. And he was about, 6'4". And he blocked the door. He reached down and he said to me, "Hi." why look up at him. I took his hand, threw it in the air, and went under his arm. I never said a word to him. I thought, you're brave, real brave. I could have got your knees. Nothing else, but I could have got your knees. And the other gentleman looked like Santa Claus with a buzz cut. And twinkly blue eyes, cutest old man. And his name was Jimmy, and Jimmy was from the South. And Jimmy would, and it's, the reason this is important is because this is what I held on to when I was early in sobriety. Jimmy would say, "Hi, my name's Jimmy. I'm an alcoholic. Hang up your hat, you're home." Oh, God, I held on to that because I did not feel like I belonged anywhere. I was pretty sure I had been adopted. I didn't think I was even from the planet. You know, I just didn't belong. And I didn't understand why, because everybody else looked like they belonged. Okay. Now, I'm 2.5 years into this gig. I'm sitting in the back. I'm not talking to anybody. I won't do any service. I won't read nothing. I'm just sitting there. Now, I came to AA from another 12-step program. And it was a woman I'd met there that she and I used to go out drinking together that she said, you know, I need to go to AA. And I agreed with her. Because she drank a lot worse than I drank, of course, right? And she said, would you go with me? I said, okie dokie. And I went for 5 months, and I didn't drink. I just wanted to be a good friend, you know? Then I planned a drunk. And I went out, and I got rip-roaring. And it was a Saturday night, so I had Sunday to recoup. And on Monday morning, I used to work for the health department in San Bernardino, and I was driving around. And I came up to this stoplight, and there was a sign, one of those folding signs next to the street. And I looked at it and said, we open at 6:30. And I thought, huh, what opens at 6:30? It's a bar. And I went, great, I can get drunk now before I go to work. And I went, and I hit the next stoplight. And that stoplight, the thought came to me, and I'm sure higher power gave it to me, you don't think you're an alcoholic. Normal people don't think about getting drunk before work. And they also don't count their drinks. First time out, boy, I did. Okay, so I better look at my notes. Sorry, guys. Higher power. So I get involved in the program. You come here, and the way you join is you raise your hand for 30 days, then you go back in the woodwork. That was my program. So I did that, and then I, about 2.5 years into the deal, I start to nut up, and I mean, I got crazy. So I go back to my friend, and I said to her, I'm crazy. She said, you might try doing it their way. That seemed like a good idea. Now, the problem was, I didn't know any other women but her. I mean, there was only, I'm not kidding you, I went to a meeting where there were 60, at least 60 men, 3 women. So I didn't think there were any women in AA, and it is a joy for me to see all the women in this audience. So I said, well, you think your sponsor would, you know, sponsor me? So she gives me the phone number, and I call. Now, a few weeks before this, I had decided on my own I needed a higher power. And I didn't want anybody to see me, but I went in a closet at my home, and I closed the door. Nobody was home, but I closed the door, and I got on my knees. And I said this prayer. All right, you son of a bitch, you've got my attention. What do you want? Now, I'm still standing here. That talks to God's love right there. And you know what happened? I heard a voice that said, welcome back, daughter. I've missed you. And I went, crap. There really is a God, and I bet you he knows everything I've done. This is not good. It was not good news to me. But at least I knew there was a higher power there. That was important. Okay, so that's when I encountered a higher power, and I began to work with this higher power. Mostly AA was my higher power, but I began to pray and ask for parking places. It works. My brother just had an aorta in his gut fixed about 2 weeks ago now. And his wife was driving me to the hospital. We were going to go pick him up. And she goes, oh, Patty, it works. You've got to look at the parking place we got. And I said, yeah. I hadn't prayed for one. And she said, you told me this worked. I always pray for one. And I thought, oh, my God, how many years ago did I tell her that? I must have been excited about getting all these parking places way back 36 years ago or something, you know. But she remembered. The next day she said the same thing, and that day I had prayed because I wanted to pick him up out of ICU and get home, and I was grateful he'd come through the surgery so well. Okay, let's see. Good. I'm going to skip that because it ain't no big deal. My sponsor helped me through a rough time. I had planned to kill my ex-boss for a year. And I know, I look so innocent. I had it planned out. I had the money. I knew who to hire. Oh, yeah. I was going to do it because he deserved it. Poor guy. He didn't deserve it, okay? It was just my insanity. So I go to the sponsor, my first session with her, and I said, well, I want to kill this guy. And she said, oh, why? So I start telling her. I justified everything, right? And she said, well, what do you think you need to do? I said, I need to make amends to him because I have been really, really awful to him. He doesn't know I plan to kill him. But when I worked with him, I was not a nice employee. And she said, okay. I said, well, I don't know what to say to him. And she said, dear so-and-so, please forgive my past actions and attitude. I said, oh, that's good. Let me write it down. So I write it down, and I said, well, how do I sign it? Sign it, love, Patty. I went, love? I don't love him. You know, and she goes, Patty, give him God's love if you can't give him yours. I said, no sweat off my back, because at that time I really didn't care, right? So I did that, and I got a very nice letter back. I worked with that sponsor for about 9 months. She moved away, and a year after that, she passed away from cancer. And then I moved to Alaska, and I spent the next 27, 28 years in Alaska. Okay, I want to talk about my mental illness. A lot of people come in here with a mental illness. Some people get sober, and pretty soon it hits them. Depression, schizophrenia, you know, personality disorders, whatever it is. Well, I had 25 years of sobriety, and I went to work one day, minding my own business, went to work one day, sat down at my desk, and about, you know, 8:30, I start crying. And I couldn't stop. I cried all day. Now, I cry Bambi or what are those Hallmark card things, you know, tears running, you know, that's so sweet. Not just crying and not being able to stop. So that's the first day. I go home and I'm exhausted because I've been crying all day, right? Thank God my boss wasn't around because I closed my door. You weren't ever allowed to close your door. And the next day I come in, I think, okay, it's got to be better today. I come in, it was like 10 minutes, I start crying. Well, I had worked as a therapist for so long, I knew that I had employee assistance program, and I called and asked for help. And I said, but I asked first, are you going to tell my employer? Okay, because, you know, this would not be good. She's in there and thinking about killing herself. Not good at all. So she said, well, it's going to be about a day and a half before I can get you in to see the psychiatrist. Can you hang on? Because one of the things she asked me, are you suicidal? Oh, yeah, I am. Do you have a way? Yeah, I have a way. And I plan to do it. I need help. I'm telling you, this, I've never felt like this. Now, I've been depressed periodically in my lifetime. That's very common with someone who has been sexually abused, but not like this. I couldn't see color. Everything was in muted grays, blacks, whites. No yellows, no any blues, nothing. I couldn't see color. And I couldn't, I couldn't control this. I'd always been able to control my emotions, and I had no control over this. And I was terrified. And I had 25 years. You know, I went to 3 to 5 meetings a week. I worked with a sponsor. I read the big book. When I went on the road, I took all that with me. In Alaska, we had toll-free numbers, so I could call from anywhere in the state and join a meeting. And did. I was in my jammies in the hotel room. It was great. And talking with someone in Kotzebue or Nome or, you know, 4 or 5 of us on the phone. It was great. It really was. I was doing all that stuff. I had no reason to be this crazy. And I got in to see the psychiatrist. She put me on like 5 meds. And I said, we really need all of these because I'm, you know, I'm recovering. I don't want 15,000 different meds. And she said, yes. And she explained them. All right. I said, okay, I want you to know I'm in recovery. If any of these mess with me, we're going to find something else or we're going to quit. She was wonderful with me in terms of working with me. There was a couple of them she gave me. One of them was Prozac. I took that for a month, said, oh, hell no. And I quit it cold turkey. Shouldn't do that, but I it was not good for my body. So anyway, all's good because I was stabilized. It took 2.5 years, and I was suicidal every day for 2.5 years. Right at the end of that 2.5 years, my boss sent me out to investigate a suicide in a treatment program. I said, I don't want to go. And she said, well, I don't have anyone else to send. I don't want to go. Now, I never told her that I was suicidal. Oh, no, no. And I did tell her I was depressed and I was taking medication. This is a licensed clinical social worker, and her response to me is, I've never worked with anybody who's depressed. And I thought, what the hell you been doing? If you just look in the office, the people that work here, there's a mess of them. And I thought, okay. I said, well, my car won't work. It won't go out in the valley. And she said, we'll rent your car. And I went, because she had told me, if you can't do something, you need to tell me. So she lied to me, right? Well, I felt betrayed again. Oh, poor me, the victim, yes. Okay, so I go out and I investigate this suicide. And I'm telling you, it was horrible. It was horrible. What happened, however, now the other thing is I couldn't see colors. I also could not feel my higher power's presence. And I'd had a very powerful relationship with my higher power before the depression hit. So I'm coming back from the valley, and I have interviewed staff. I've, you know, and this had happened like a month before they sent me out there. to tear the emotional scabs off this staff. And I was very upset about that. But I had gotten through it. I had done the investigation, and I was driving back. And I'm talking to God. Whether I can feel his presence or not, I know he didn't load up that U-Haul and move away. You know, I knew something else had happened. I get home, and I have a little dog that I had adopted, and her name was Pookie. She was just the cutest little dog in the world. I swore I'd never turn 50 and have a poodle, and I did. And she always jumped on me, was so happy to see me, and I came in the door, and she wasn't jumping on me. I thought, oh my God, where's Pookie? And I'm looking around, and she had curled up in her little basket and passed away. And, yeah, this happened about 15, maybe even 20 years ago, and it still chokes me up. I love that dog. And if you go by my car, you'll notice that God's blessed me with three others. And I'm the leader of the pack, at least that's the way I look at it. So I told God, I mean, you know, I'm sobbing, and I told God, no more, I can't take any more. You think I'm strong, but I'm not strong. I can't do this. A week later, my best friend died of leukemia. 2 weeks after that, I had another loss, and I thought, whatever, I don't feel nothing, screw it. Well, by the end of July, I had come out of the depression. The meds were working. I was stabilized. And by the end of the year, like November, they put me on a board at the state level to write policy and procedures for the mentally ill substance abusing population and their families. Now, you don't think that's a God shot? I did. I thought, huh, was that what all of that was about? See, I could book read, I could learn in the classroom, but I experienced the depth of depression, and I came out of it. And I got to help to write those policies. Blew my mind. And the whole time I'm doing that, I'm just saying, thank you, God. Thank you that I didn't commit suicide. Thank you that I had enough insurance by all those meetings I went to, all those people I helped, and the service. And I was talking to the folks up here, and they're all involved in service. Bill asked me to talk about service. I love service. I live the kind of gypsy life that I usually can't make a commitment to be secretary or treasurer at a meeting, but I will get there in time to set up chairs, to clean up, coffee stuff or whatever's around the outside. I will go and stick my hand out to everyone in that room because that's part of my responsibility. And there's a lot of people that are sitting there and they're going, stay the hell away from me, lady, stay the hell away. And I just go, oh, I'm so glad you're here. What was your name? You know, and I go, I'm old. I don't always remember people's names. And that works. Yeah? No one's ever hit me once. Now, my sponsor, that sponsor way back when, she said, I want you to go to the Friday night speaker meeting, and I want you to give your phone number to a lady, a new lady. And I went, what? You know, because I had been sitting back there, you know, giving the evil eye to everybody, and now I got to give somebody my number. And so I found this little chicky poo, and I told her, I didn't even know what I was saying, but I said, my name's so-and-so, and here's my phone number. Call me if you're out there alone or blah, blah, blah. And she's glaring at me. And I'm thinking, I must have been so cute. That's all I could think about. Oh, I must have been so cute. Okay, so I want to talk just briefly, and I have just briefly, about the cost of my drinking. It cost me both of my marriages. I went out on my husband every time I drank. I went out and did something wild and woolly. And, you know, I lost those marriages, both of them. I used other people for my own gains, and I did not care. I had no conscience about it. I talked about doing fraudulent behavior, and I was on welfare, so I even stole toilet paper from them. Seems minor, but you kind of have to have toilet paper, you know? These little squares on the back of my toilet. There were a lot of illegal behaviors there. I had blackouts. I drove in blackouts. I had a two-day blackout on the combination of alcohol and amphetamines, diet pills. I came to on a soccer field. And the critical nature of that was I was supposed to be proctoring an exam, which I was an hour late for, and more importantly, I did not know where my little son was. And I thought, oh my God. So I went to the babysitters praying that he was there, and he was, and I couldn't remember the day before. So I very casually said to her, how did he do yesterday? She looks at me and says, what do you mean? Did he say something? Was he upset? I said, no, I'm just wondering how he did yesterday. Oh, he did fine. I got in the car and I just bent over the steering wheel and said, thank you, God, for caring for my son. I mean, it freaked me out. Okay. I took money from others. I took from the family budget. I lied repeatedly to these husbands. I picked fights with my husband so I could go out and get drunk. I left my son with my ex-husband. In other words, I dumped my son. Now, in my head, I'm justifying it because he's got an adult and he's got supervision. I dumped that kid so I could go drink. And that is something that I am not in any way, shape, or form proud of. Now, the benefits of sobriety, and the first and the most foremost for me, is a relationship with a higher power that I choose to call God. The second is the peace of mind, and the brain has settled down, the peace of mind that I actually experience. My sponsorship, I love sponsoring my ladies. I love them, and I love my sponsor. My sponsor lives up here at Springville. And I give people rides to meetings. That's one of my favorite things to do because it gets my butt to a meeting. I have a worldwide family. I could go to AA in any country in the world. Maybe not Russia, but, you know, most of them. I love the literature. There are two, well, besides the big book and the 12 and 12, which I cherish, there are two pamphlets that are to me so incredibly important. And if you're a newcomer, read the one on sponsorship in AA. The other one is medications for the alcoholic. Because a lot of times people will say something like, you need to throw all those drugs away that doctor's given you. You're an addict. Hello, where's your MD? You know, where does it say psychiatrist after your name? That's practicing without a license, folks, sorry. You know? It drives me freaking insane when one of my people who need medication tell me that. I have financial security. I own my home outright. I have a little trailer house I own outright. I drive an older car, but by God, it's mine. And I don't live on a lot of money, but I know how to use it wisely. And I ask for guidance. I have the most important thing, benefit for me, is I learn through these steps and through this program how to forgive the two men who sexually abused me, how to forgive my mother who knew about it, And I'm going to tell you a very quick story. The 50th reunion, right? They have a website or whatever. And I had spoken in Alaska, and I talked about forgiveness and how what an incredible skill I can now turn to and use. And that was on Saturday night. On Monday, I get a little thing on my phone that says my first husband's second wife was coming to the reunion. She sexually abused my son. And I'm going, my first husband's going to be there, his second wife, I'm going to be there. And I'm going, whoa. Then I started laughing. Okay? I cracked up. Why? Because God said, oh, you've learned how to forgive over here? Okay, baby girl, let's see how you do on this one. And I talk to the three or four or five people, and then I get home and I call my sponsor, and she said, Patty, you said it in the beginning. I said, well, if it's that great, you better repeat it for me. And she said, you said it was none of your business. And I went, whoa, that's a hard one to swallow. And the reason it was none of my business is my son will be 47 next month. It's his business. Now, if he is 12 or 13 or a kid, that's my business. And I'd have kicked your ass, no matter how much sobriety. In fact, I didn't go to a lot of reunions because I was really afraid I'd run into her. And I wasn't sure, even with all I knew, that I wouldn't hurt her. I thought, in fact, at some point, I thought she was dead. So, you know, God gave me this little gift. I got to work on more forgiveness. There's a woman who wrote a book. Her name's Alonzo, the last name. She said, now, day after day, I have the choice to forgive the two men who took so much from me, or I can choose to wallow in a toxic brew of bitterness. I don't choose bitterness today. I choose joy. I choose life. I choose integrity. I choose every day to be clean and sober. And I'll tell you what, I woke up, God woke me up at 12:01 yesterday morning, and I thought, oh man, I just went to bed 2 hours ago, and I look at the clock, and then I started giggling. I said, happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you. I said, thanks God, appreciate the wake up. Thanks for still being with me all this time. And what I've been working on the last 3 years is trusting my higher power. Both my son and my daughter-in-law started drinking again after 23 and 26 years. Trust God. He's got it, right? God's got this. There's three C's in Al-Anon. I didn't cause it. I can't control it. And I can't cure it. And that keeps me sane and loving them every time I see them. And loving you as well. Thank you.